This is the Real Talk University podcast, where your hosts, Andre and Christian, explore success stories outside of the classroom.
What is up, Real Talk fam? Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Real Talk University podcast. This is the fifth episode of season two, our fourth interview of the season. We're happy to bring on Aditya Agash, best-selling author of Swipe to Unlock. The story behind this interview is actually pretty cool. So Christian and I, as you all know, are sophomores in college at Binghamton University. And one of the classes we're taking together this semester is Management Information Systems, which is a requirement for the school of management program that we're in. And one of the homework assignments early on in the class was to read this book, Swipe to Unlock, which was really, you know, an intriguing book to read for Christian and I, just because it's very, you know, aligning with what our podcast talks about with self-education and just showing interest in tech and startups and entrepreneurship. So we figured, you know, let's write the report and read the book. Great, but why not reach out to the author and get him on the podcast? And that's exactly what we did. So we're really grateful for Adi. He goes by Adi. His full name's Aditya. So thank you, Adi, for coming on to our podcast. We learned a lot from you, and it definitely added to our experience with the book project and whatnot. So I'm going to hand it off to Christian and give the first of our three takeaways.
Yeah, so for the first one, guys, while you're not obviously going to be as into tech as Adi is, just he really recommended that you stay up to date with the latest tech news, because obviously whatever field you're in, technology is going to have a major impact on it, and even the world we live in today, like automated cars, the world where Uber's taking us and all that kind of stuff. So just staying up to date with the latest tech news is really important. It's basically like you being an involved citizen, because in my opinion, it's just as important as politics and things like that, because technology has the ability to alter the world in any given moment.
Definitely. The second biggest takeaway that we had from this episode was to get feedback from your audience. So Adi's on his second book, and the cool thing was that he wrote it with a team of two other people, which was pretty cool for me to hear. And one of the things he said that helped them along their journey on, you know, writing the book and seeing what fits in the book and what to get rid of was the content, and sharing that content with their audience on LinkedIn and Quora, just to get their feedback and see, you know, is this something that we should keep in the final version? Is this something that our audience is interested in seeing more of? And he accredited the feedback and posting that throughout the working of Swipe to Unlock to its success. So keep that in mind when you're doing things like podcasting and writing articles or anything else that you're, you know, putting out into the world, is to get feedback and really push yourselves to accept like what people are thinking, because you're doing it for the audience more than you're doing it for yourself, or at least that should be the mindset.
Absolutely, guys. Then the last takeaway is about investing, because he made a prediction that Lyft will be acquired by Amazon in the near future, which would obviously have implications on the Lyft stock. So just relating to that, he basically just said, do your own research on stocks. Don't invest any more than you're comfortable doing or comfortable losing, all that stuff. But really, just don't go on what anybody else is saying, because while he might be an expert in the field and he might know a lot about the acquisition of Lyft in the near future, it's still really good to do your own due diligence and make sure that you're making the right investment and right choices with your money. So we hope you guys enjoyed the episode. It was really, really just a great experience to learn from someone who knows so much about the tech industry and has written a best-selling book, and we hope you guys enjoy.
How's it going, Real Talk fam? I just wanted to jump in here real quick before we start this new episode of Real Talk University with an offer that Christian and I have put together for you guys. Basically, as a thank you for listening and tuning into all of our episodes and supporting us along the way so far. So what we put together is the Podcast Blueprint ebook, which you'll have access to for free. Absolutely free. This is a downloadable PDF containing all the information, actionable steps, tips, resources, everything you need to launch your very own successful podcast in 30 days or less, exactly how Christian and I have done so. After reading our ebook, you'll be able to launch your own podcast today, book your dream guest for your interviews, and get ads and sponsors immediately. To claim your free copy today, visit the link at bit.ly/RTU ebook. That's bit.ly/RTU ebook. EBOOK. Get your free copy today before this offer expires.
Yeah, I'm ready. Thank you.
Okay, awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on the podcast. My name's Andre. This is Christian here, my co-host of the Real Talk University podcast. And basically, we, you know, interview entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs, authors, whatever they may be, who have done something really significant outside of the classroom. Obviously, you've had a lot of success in entrepreneurship with your book like Swipe to Unlock and your role at Microsoft. So we're really excited to have you on. And for our audience out there that isn't quite sure who you are, if you could just introduce yourself and tell them a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Andre, and nice to meet you, Christian. My name is Adi. I'm a PM at Microsoft, and I'm the author of Swipe to Unlock. It's a book on understanding technology and business strategy. We published it 2 years ago. Luckily, it's taken off with two audiences. One, people who are looking to break into the tech industry. It's a good primer on a lot of the strategic directions and business models that firms use, while also helping you understand what happens underneath the hood of many common technology products that you use every day. And the flip side is, you know, a lot of people were seeing these big tech concepts in the news. Like they see Zuckerberg testifying in front of Congress, and they see their congressmen and women not knowing some of these basic concepts. And so if you want to be a digitally engaged citizen, that's the secondary market that we're slowly starting to build into.
That's awesome. And I know that especially in today's age, building a personal brand is really huge for credibility and things like that. So how has your book been able to unlock new opportunities for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when we published, we kind of had to create the stickiness with the niche of students and early professionals who are looking to break into the tech industry. And what that involved was going on Quora and just answering a lot of questions about business models, about how to break into PM, about the tech industry in general. And later on, what we did was we started posting a lot on LinkedIn. And we realized that on LinkedIn, a lot of the content that we saw that other people were posting was either news articles or updates to their professional career path, like they just switched jobs or they just moved cities or stuff like that. And what we realized was we had a lot of ideas after like just reading the news about predictions, and that's a lot of the stuff that we captured in the book. And that's when we read Amazon reviews and talked to people who had read it. That's the feedback that we got. That was the most valuable and interesting part of the book. So we decided on LinkedIn to share our thoughts on when news events happen, how we see the product roadmap of the company or the strategic direction that the company is going to go down, and make predictions on that. And those types of posts have done surprisingly well because not many other people do that on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn is like the perfect place to publish those because you get a lot of visibility from professionals who are also working in those industries, and you get them to comment and you get more insights and you can follow up with them and refine the prediction over time. And so really, in terms of growing our personal brand, I think doing that, you know, guerrilla marketing efforts in the beginning on Quora and a lot of these question answer sites, and then later on taking those insights and learnings and publishing our predictions on LinkedIn has helped us just get a lot of reach. And now that's starting to lead to a lot of other opportunities. Like we do talks at universities, at conferences, where we do either a talk or a workshop that teaches people how we make these predictions. And then we give three predictions that we see happening in the next year or two of big companies like Amazon, Lyft, Apple, Spotify, Netflix, stuff like that.
Yeah, could you just give us some examples of where you think those companies are going to go in the future? Because obviously you have a really strong tech background compared to us, so we'd like to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, of course. So let's do a fun one. So one prediction that we have is that we think that Amazon is going to acquire Lyft. And there's a lot of, it would be really strategically valuable for them to do so. And the theory behind this is basically, if you look at the S1 filing of Lyft when they went IPO, you would see that the customer acquisition cost per user is roughly $41 or $42. And the average revenue per user in year one and onwards is $51 to $52, which means Lyft is actually has the potential to be, they have a spread there. They have the possibility to make money per user because they're generating between $10 to $11 of profit per user. The problem is, because they have such high fixed costs, these ride-sharing apps like Lyft and Uber, they're just not profitable because they have to keep reinvesting into infrastructure and growing out and making sure they're always matching supply and demand. And this is a really competitive, cutthroat industry. Like if Uber is $2 cheaper than Lyft, the vast majority of users are going to check both apps and go with that cheaper option. And so people are price sensitive, they're not very differentiated products. And right now, Uber controls 70% of the market. And so that just creates network effects because they can have more of the market, they can hire more drivers, since they have more supply, they can accommodate more demand, and so they can make the prices cheaper. And so because of that, Lyft is up against this kind of system that is slowly eating away at them. And if you look at their stock price since they've launched, it's been down 30% since the peak. And so given that it's on this trajectory and given that it's hard to make these sort of operational efficiencies and scale using network effects, we think that if Amazon were to acquire them, Amazon now has started to do, they obviously do two-day shipping. They started to do one-day shipping in over 30 U.S. cities, and they do two-hour delivery using Prime now in over 17 cities. And what this means is, in order to fulfill these deliveries, they need some sort of fleet on the ground to go to these fulfillment centers, distribution centers, and move stuff to, people's homes. And there's a fact, I think 80% or more of Americans, maybe it's 70%, are located within 3 hours of an Amazon distribution center. And so this makes perfect sense. If they had a network like Lyft of drivers, when a Lyft driver doesn't have a ride to complete, rather than going to Uber or going to Grubhub or one of these other platforms to keep making money, they would just deliver, go to an Amazon fulfillment center and deliver. And so now you solve Amazon's logistic problem, you solve Lyft's utilization problem of drivers. And the second, the last thing is, we talked about price. Amazon has the largest loyalty program in the world. There are over 120 million people who pay for Prime. And Prime has been really, really successful at increasing the average basket size of yearly spend per consumer. People used to spend, on average, like $100 to $200 on Amazon. And Prime users started out spending $500, $600. And now those numbers are yearly Amazon Prime members spend over $1,000. And so Amazon has successfully been able to convert a lot of spend and drive a lot of money and just sales through these Prime subscribers. And so you can imagine some sort of loyalty program where if you are an Amazon Prime member, you get 10% off Lyft forever. And now that automatically makes your Lyft more cheaper than Uber, and it allows you to slowly reverse against these network effects and gain market share from Uber and actually start to be competitive. And so if Lyft goes down this path of, it's down 30%. If it goes down to, let's say, 50, 60% from its peak, that's, 50, 60% off. It's like a fire sale for Amazon to just come in and swoop it up and integrate it with its entire logistics and supply chain.
That was incredible. You just, like, the insight and analysis you have in that is insane. So I was just wondering, have you ever taken this insight and predictions that you guys have and applied it to like the stock market, perhaps like acquiring shares of Lyft?
Yeah. So when we made this post on LinkedIn, it got picked up by a few, like by Business Insider, Forbes, a few other journals, and it started getting a lot of traction. And so honestly, I should have had calls on Lyft or held the underlying stock, but the problem with this is it's highly speculative. You don't know when their company is going to actually do an acquisition. And if it's on a downward trend, if something like Lyft is on a downward trend, you're just eating up either margin or you're just like losing underlying value. So it's a little difficult to trade on acquisition plays. But for other plays where you see a long-term vision of a company, those are the type of things where I do invest. If I see, right now a company is only, dabbling in a small niche and they're doing really well, but then the vision seems like in 5 to 10 years they can scale up and get total market share and be the number one player in the space. For stuff like that, I think that is a much easier bet to buy the underlying, maybe even buy some leap calls or something like that, and speculate on that.
Awesome. And where did you like pick up the skills or the knowledge to like be able to put together an analysis that you just ran us through?
Yeah, so me and my co-authors, like whenever we see something on the news, we always just, we start connecting the dots and like brainstorming like what would happen. And specifically for Lyft and Uber, I remember like during that time, Lyft went IPO first and there was like the ride sharing wars, like everyone was talking about the IPO. And so we read the S-1 filings and it's just like seeing those numbers, it's shocking. Like I talked about the customer acquisition numbers and average revenue per user, and it's shocking because you would think these companies are able to double down on that sort of profit margin and increase the bottom line. But just given the nature of the market and how competitive it is and how much infrastructure you need, you just got to keep putting that money back in to keep growing. And eventually they might be profitable and it might take off, but it's just like analyzing that and looking at other factors. Like Amazon recently closed, they were doing Amazon restaurants, which is like a Grubhub compete, food delivery compete. And they shut down that service. It was operating in like 10 plus cities, including Seattle. And I've used it before and they shut it down because their costs were just too high. They tried to create this sort of network on their own and they realized that doing it from scratch, they were bleeding money. And a company like Amazon, who is very concerned about their P&L and their earnings every quarter, they can't just have a lot of these sinkholes where they're just draining money. And so it makes more sense that just like naturally led us to think like if they realize they can't do it on their own, they could partner or they could buy. Those are the two only other options remaining. And partnering doesn't give them all these cost efficiencies and allow them to make these tight integrations. So most likely the play is to buy. And Lyft is investing in, self-driving technology and that can be the future in 5 to 10 years to make the system even more efficient. But and Amazon is looking at robotics and drone technology to do deliveries. And there's a lot of things you could do down the road if FTC approves a lot of these things. FCC approves like the drone regulations and we have more strict regulations on cars and driving. But yeah, I mean, if we just like talk about these things, brainstorm ideas, post it on LinkedIn, see if it gets traction. Some things get more traction than others. People who comment, we reach out to them, especially if they're working at Lyft or Amazon, like in this case. And then we just refine the predictions. And sometimes it gets picked up and that's good.
Awesome. And what are some of the resources online where you like collect this kind of information, like where you follow startup or tech news? Like for me, like I think TechCrunch is like my number one go-to. Do you have like a list of a few that you typically go to?
Yeah, TechCrunch, The Verge. I subscribe to like a lot of like news. So the way I consume news is I subscribe to like these newsletters that send you like a bit of news every day, like 5 or 6 top articles in like different areas. And I like read the summaries. And then if something is really interesting, I go down a rabbit hole. I'll just like Google it and I'll read like everything on the first 2 pages of Google about that topic. And that way I'm able to like just have a general understanding of what's going on in the world and then be more diligent and tactical about what I want to just, whatever I'm interested in, whatever I get really curious about, I just like go down a rabbit hole on that. So that's what happened with this. Like I saw a lot of things that week about these IPOs and the Lyft S-1 filing was just really interesting. I just read a lot of analysis, looked at like past data that, Business Insider does a good job of for startups that aren't public. They have speculative numbers that they extrapolate based on monthly actives that the CEO might say in some conference and stuff like that. And they plot this down, they give you nice charts about it. So I looked historically to see like 2016 numbers, 2014 numbers, and that stuff isn't in the S-1, but now you get a historical trend of like what's growing, what's not, what's tapering off, is their profit margin increasing, are they reinvesting profits? And you start painting this picture in your head of If I was the CEO and these are the numbers, like, what would I be doing? What would I look for? And by just getting into like that C-suite, that CEO's like shoes, you're able to like think like, if I was in these shoes, I see like my stock is going down 30, it's on track to be down 50%. How do I revitalize the company now that my, you know, all my early investors, all these VC firms, they've had their exit. What do I do now to make sure that we're on a road to long-term success?
Yeah, that's a lot of great information there. And I just want to transition back into the book with a question that's kind of similar, because the advice you just gave for anybody looking to get more into tech and startups, you just gave them a bunch of great resources. So what inspired you to write the book? Was it a passion for helping others, like you just said, with the information you provided? Or was it just more of a way to grow your own brand?
Yeah, so at the time, that's a really good question. At the time, I was running my own business. It was a tech consulting business where I would either, it was like pretty, whatever clients I could really find. Like, it started out where I would just like build software for different clients. If they were big businesses, I would charge them money. If they were startups, I would charge them money and equity in the business. And slowly that scaled to doing like data science optimizations, like to optimize like ticket prices for like hockey games or like sports games, and the average revenue per seat. And I was just like trying to see, you know, get my feet wet and explore a lot of different industries by applying tech and doing consulting. So during that, a lot of my clients would ask me questions like, hey, on the news, I heard about big data and machine learning. Like, how do I use that in my business? And, or like, I see like blockchain blowing up. Like, can we use that here? And, you know, majority of the time, like, they don't need blockchain. They don't need to use these advanced machine learning models to just optimize, you know, ticket sales or revenue. That just requires a different way of strategic thinking, and then some, you know, data analysis to back that up. And so I thought to myself, like, at the time, like, Freakonomics a couple of years ago was blowing up, and I had read that book, and I loved it. It had like these really insightful cases that like drew you in, made you think. It explained the background and then the, you know, economic theory or the human psychology behind it. And I felt like I learned a lot. And so I thought to myself, if there was a Freakonomics like tech, that would be really valuable. And so two of my close friends, they're PMs at Google and Facebook, we collaborated and we wrote the book, and we started out just like that. We open each chapter with like a fun case, and then we dive into, like, for example, on the big data case, we open it with a fun story. Like, back 16 years ago, back like 7 years ago, there was a 16-year-old girl who, you know, she started going with her friends to Target because, like, there was a Starbucks at that Target, and that was a hangout spot after high school. And she signed up for Target's loyalty program. And one day, her father, you know, through the mail, he saw that Target was sending her flyers. So he, like, opened it up, and he opened it to see that Target was sending her coupons for like prenatal creams and vitamins and all these pregnancy related coupons. And he got really furious at that. He filed a lawsuit against Target. I remember he was on TV, on a lot of different media outlets. And it became this whole story that the news cycle just picked up. And 3 weeks later, after starting this, I remember he was on air and he publicly apologized and dropped the lawsuit because he found out earlier that morning that his daughter was actually pregnant. And so somehow Target knew with over a 90-95% confidence level that that 16-year-old girl was pregnant even before her own father did. And so we open with a case like that, and we say, like, how do they do it? Like, what is big data? How are they piecing together these different pieces of information to get that? We explain it, and then dive into the social implications, the future trends, how we see this sort of trend playing out in the future, different companies adopting it for different business models, things of that nature.
Yeah, that's incredible. And one of the questions I personally had just for writing my own book recently this year was, what was it like teaming up with two other people to write the book? Like, how did you guys organize your ideas and formulate them into one project? Was that like a struggle, or did it make it easier, do you think?
I think it made it a lot easier. So we did something where, so we split it up in a really, like, way, in a good way that worked for all of us. So Parth and I would, like, come up with a lot of the insights on, like, what to write about. We would talk to a lot of people, and we actually just, like, did turned it kind of into like a research survey kind of thing, where we had a lot of ideas and we did a conjoint analysis, just put that out there, and saw like up, like one chapter or one topic up against another. Like for big data, should we open with a case on target, or should we talk about how companies are doing analytics in the back end? And we would get a lot of data on like, is it better to talk about more of the technical side or this fun business case? And obviously the fun business case won with our audience in this one. And we just like put the match these things up against each other, saw which ones were most interesting. And when we had data on that, now we had an exact idea of what to write about. And so we did a lot of research. I did a lot of research to outline and find sources for a lot of these things, interviewed a lot of people in the space, either, you know, VPs or C-suite at these companies, depending on how big they were, and just got a lot of insights about each of these cases. And then when we had that, we, Neil took over and he took, so basically like the initial like outlines were like a page or two per chapter on like what topics we should write on. And then I like fleshed these out and made them like 10 page to 15 page like outlines. And at the end, Neil went through and he polished it up and made sure we had like a same uniform voice in that. And this process was really streamlined. It worked really well. And at the same time, like while, you know, part section was done, when he finished like the outlines, he could now focus on, you know, AdWords and marketing and setting up that while I would be doing the outlines. And when I was done, Neil would take over and he would like make it polished and do the copywriting while I would work with Parth and set up some of the you know, actual legal stuff and the shell company to publish it and get it listed on Amazon and all that sort of stuff. And so we like worked really well. We by parallelizing it, I think we were able to all have a strong understanding of the content, all be able to not be blocked by each other, and just be able to parallelly optimize the whole process. It took over a year, but I think that we worked really well. That's why we worked well on the that's why we worked together on the second book, Bubble Revolution, which just came out 2 months ago.
Yeah, that's awesome. It sounds like it was a great experience for you guys too. So I wanted to ask if you could like talk about your favorite memory from when you guys went through that entire process. And obviously that, I mean, it took a little while, like you said, but it was definitely worth it. And then also if you could talk about one of your biggest learnings through doing that, maybe that you applied to the newly released book that you just mentioned.
Yeah. Let's tackle the first one first. So I think the most rewarding part of this experience is just talking to people who have read the book, and it provides some motivation for them or some insight for them, and they're able to take things to the next level, whatever that means to them. And seeing and hearing stories like that is really inspiring. Like just last week, I was at Carnegie Mellon, and I was doing a talk on this sort of stuff, like business strategy and some predictions. And after the talk, this student from University of Pittsburgh, he traveled all the way to CMU. I mean, it's in the same city, but he came all the way and he talked to me after, and he was like, "Hey, like, I really appreciate your talk. Like, I read your book, and it really just made me more interested in tech and want to apply a lot of these business models to business that I run." And he was telling me his background, like his family was on food stamps and he went to the military and he sent money back home just to put food on the table. And after he came back, he started his own business, and he was just doing it to earn money and survive, honestly. And now that he got to business school, everyone around him says like, "Hey, like, you're an entrepreneur. That's so cool. Like, how'd you get the idea to start a business?" And he said something to me that just, it made me think. He was like, "Everyone keeps saying I'm entrepreneur, but I'm not an entrepreneur. Like, I was doing this to put food on the table." I feel like he said an entrepreneur is like, I guess if you start a business and you have money, people can call you that. But for me, it was just a way of life. I had to do it to survive. And now, like, learning about some of these business models, learning about how to use technology, I want to like create these systems and optimize some of these things in my own business and take it to the next level. And we had like a really good conversation afterwards about how you could do that. And just like seeing someone like that, someone who has hustled so hard, who has, you know, he was so humble after that entire experience, just seeing that little bit of help that I could provide them, and that motivation after reading the book and any help that like I can provide, it makes you feel so good that you're able to touch someone's life in that kind of way. And so hearing stories like that has been the most rewarding, whether it's in person or reading Amazon reviews or just getting emails or messages on LinkedIn. That I would say is what keeps us going. And what was your second question? What was the biggest learning?
Yeah, what's something that you learned while writing your first book that you then applied to the second project?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think one thing that we did during writing Swipe to Unlock, after the launch, what we did was we posted a lot on Quora, and that was really good because we started getting a lot of comments on there when we answered these questions, and it's just a community where a lot of people will, if they don't agree with your opinion or they'll like push back and they'll give you a different perspective and different way of thinking. And so what we realized was like the more we post about these things, it's easier to see what the demand looks like, see what people are interested in learning. And similar to those sort of studies I told you about we did for Swipe, we decided to crowdsource it to the next level. And so even before Bubble came out, we published a lot, answered a lot of core questions, published a lot on LinkedIn about cryptocurrencies, made predictions about acquisitions, saw like what was really sparking interest. And after gathering all of that, we even before finishing writing the book, we went to conferences where we gave presentations on like what we think is the future of money and blockchain and cryptocurrencies. And from meeting a lot of people, from interviewing a lot of founders in the space, developers, venture capitalists, that all piecing together all of that information helped us take a very informed view on the subject. Because when we looked at it, all the books out there were either really, there were just two types. One was like really, really bullish on the technology and said that it would like be a one-trick pony to solve all your problems. And the others were just really technical, explaining like what it is and how the hashing works and the deep technical knowledge of mining and different things related to blockchain and piecing that together. And so there was no book out there. And if you talk to people, they're really polarized on the subject. They either hate it and they think it's like a scam, or they are in love with it and they think it's going to solve all their problems. And so we wanted to take a really down the middle approach after talking to all these people, learning all these insights, and showcase like what the real applications are, where we see it playing out in the future, and what the areas where you know it falls flat are, and teasing that apart, and then making predictions about how we see this rolling out. And so biggest learning was keep talking to these sort of people who are in the space, keep experimenting even before you write the full book, like give talks on it, post about it, you know, just start collecting what things will drive demand and are most interesting to people, and then use that and write about it and give a really good perspective and unique insights at the end.
Yeah, well, I'm reading Swipe to Unlock for my class. I'm almost done with it. And I think you guys did like an unbelievable job, just because like some of the things that you make people aware of, such as like the things with the India smartphone and like the cheap tech that gets the farmers on the internet and things like that. I would have just had like no idea about that other than reading your book. So that's definitely been helpful.
And awesome. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously in the last 10 to 15 years, technology has come like exponentially far compared to where it used to be. So where do you see technology in, let's say, 10 to 15 years down the road?
Yeah, that's a really broad question. I think there's a lot of things right now that are in the limelight that are starting to get a lot of traction. We've seen this like first wave of AI and machine learning and starting to be used in conjunction with a lot of the big data that these companies are amassing to make analytics decisions or make small business processes more efficient. And I think like there's a lot of unique applications where we're going to see a second wave of this, where you're going to be able to combine data sets, you're going to be able to have a machine learning model that reads from other machine learning models. And it's like a hierarchy model where there's individual models that are optimized for certain decisions and certain industries and certain tasks, and then the overall one that chooses the best one to use. And you're going to see a lot of these sorts of like aggregate models that are able to solve bigger problems that we once thought we couldn't. Like self-driving cars, there's like multiple levels on how advanced these cars are. And recently we've been pushing the boundary and pushing the envelope on how far we can make these sort of automated products that are able to do everything in our day-to-day lives. And so with like self-driving cars, with drone technology, I think transportation is going to see like a big revolution and new business models where rather than owning a car, like right now, like the way it works is if you own a car, it's a liability. In the future, if you own a car, it could be an asset. It could be a revenue generating asset where there's already models where like there's apps like Turo where you can give people access to drive your car and it generates money. But in the future, you can imagine if you own a self-driving car, when you're not using it in its idle time, you can have it do ride sharing if it's part of, you know, a bigger network. And I think there's a lot of things like that that are interesting business models that can arise from this. So yeah, that's like, you know, this robotics is seeing a lot of innovation, second wave of AI. It's going to be interesting to see how blockchain plays out as well. Our prediction is that, you know, although this technology was invented, like Bitcoin was invented as a way to give power and it's the whole concept is decentralization. It's to give power back to the people and away from these power structures like governments and big banks that have a lot of influence in our society. But surprisingly, the way it's starting to be rolled out and our prediction is that these power institutions and these power structures that have area for making operational efficiencies, they're going to adopt blockchain, these private blockchains in the back end of their systems to make things more efficient. Because fundamentally, blockchains are useful when you have multiple parties that need to trust each other and are moving assets that are worth a lot of money between each other. And you can imagine for someone like banks, like JP Morgan put out Quorum that has consensus with a lot of banks. That's really powerful because they're doing exactly that. And if you can get an exact list of all the transactions and send it in a bulk way in a cheap manner in between banks, there's a lot of cost savings there. Same thing in healthcare with like record keeping and insurance payouts. And there's a lot of and supply chain and making things more efficient there. And so in these examples, I think these power structures will adopt it, make their systems more efficient, pass the cost savings and better user experience onto us as the consumers, but we'll never see or interact directly with this tech, at least for a while, because it'll just be used in the background and it'll just make our lives easier. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out too. But overall, I think one thing that's in the market right now with all these things that are happening, there's a lot of regulatory like news events that we hear about all the time. You hear about the fines that Facebook is paying and Google is paying. You hear about GDPR with privacy in Europe. Lena Khan, she's a her Yale law thesis was on breaking up big tech and how specifically she would break up Amazon. And now she's in charge of the antitrust division at the FTC. So there's a lot of this like regulatory pressure that these tech companies will face as they start to hit these, you know, $1 trillion market caps, and the tariffs are affecting Apple, and like all these sort of things that are happening in the political and regulatory climate. That is what I've been paying a lot of attention to recently, because that's going to directly affect the market and potentially create opportunities and niche areas to compete in because of these new policies that are in place.
That was extremely insightful, because you even said my question was broad and then you just went on and gave a great answer to it. So I thank you for that. One of our topics on our show is investing for college students. And obviously you're talking about blockchain and all these technology topics. So what is your stance on Bitcoin and just crypto in general? Would you suggest that a college kid invest a sum of money into it, or would you shy away from it?
Yeah, that's a good question. And to preface this, like as with all investment advice, like obviously make sure you're investing the money that you're comfortable losing, and make sure you do your research and are comfortable with making a really risky investment. I would say right now, cryptocurrencies are one of the most volatile and one of the riskiest asset classes out there. if you look at, even if you just look at currencies, a country like Turkey, which has had economic turmoil, and the Turkish lira, like 30 to 40% last 6 months, over the last year, has fallen even more. And you'd think that, like, that's a lot of volatility. Bitcoin moves that number. It has moved that percentage in a matter of like months or weeks. And so, along with many of its other, you know, altcoins or cryptocurrencies. And so this is, to provide scale, it's like more volatile than many, if not all, currencies out there. And the thing is, the reason why speculating on this space might be of value is because when these companies are going to start, I'll tell you where this is coming from. So I was talking to Mike Novogratz. He's a billionaire investor, and he runs crypto. He runs one of the biggest crypto hedge funds. It's called Galaxy Digital. And so when I was talking to him, we were having this conversation, and basically, like I said, like, if these private companies are going to start adopting this technology, it's going to be in the limelight. And if it's in the limelight, it's going to get, like, people are going to start thinking about it. And the second you draw public attention to something, even though JP Morgan is not, you know, publicly listing its coin, and it's not going to pop and boom, even though, like, these healthcare, like Synaptic Health Alliance and these health insurance companies aren't going to release their own token, just the fact that they're adopting blockchain, and just the fact that the word blockchain in the people's mind is tied so closely to Bitcoin, provides a good enough theory that people will speculate and throw some small basis points of their portfolio into the space. And right now, if you look at a lot of these things, so futures got released on Bitcoin about a year and a half ago. Now, these futures are cash settled futures, which means that for listeners, futures and options, they're just ways of the derivatives, and it's a little bit of a complicated topic, but basically you're just speculating on the market, and it's a bet on what direction you think it's going to go. And if you guess right, you get to buy the underlying, if it's like a call or it's a long future, you get to buy the underlying asset for a discount. And so you make a spread, and vice versa for puts. And so if you look at those futures, they're cash settled right now. They're not Bitcoin settled futures, and as the crypto ones come out, they're not going to be crypto settled, which is a problem. That means that if I'm speculating, if I speculate on stocks, if I speculate on and the commodities, and I'm buying futures or options, it's settled in that underlying stock or commodity that I'm buying. And so if I want to buy options on Microsoft and the price goes up, I have the right to purchase 100 shares of Microsoft, which means that money is going back into the stock market or the commodity market. In this case, the money is not going back into the crypto market, which means it is just the secondary market on top. But what's starting to happen is some financial companies and institutions are starting to make these Bitcoin or Ethereum backed and settled futures and options. And when that happens, that money is going to stay in the ecosystem and in the industry. And so rather than just playing on top of it, you're going to get an influx of money coming in. So now there's like two reasons that one might speculate. One is like these private companies are using it. A lot of people are going to have their attention to it, might buy it. Two, these like cash settled derivatives are coming in. And then three, companies like Fidelity, if you go to their recruiting page, Fidelity is one of the largest, you know, retirement account brokers out there, and if you look at them, they're hiring Bitcoin analysts, blockchain experts to work for them, and that just provides hints and like indication that, like we said earlier, like if someone is retiring and a couple basis points means nothing to them, if they are able to shove a couple basis points in their managed funds into Bitcoin as a speculative way where they think that, you know, if someone loses 0.5% of their portfolio, it might not mean that much to them because everything else is in the S&P and other, you know, diversified assets. And so it's generating a decent 8 to 10% return every year. And even if it's 7.5% to 9.5%, if they lose that entire amount, it's not a big deal. But because this asset class has the potential to 10x and grow much faster over time, they might consider putting a little bit of money there in it and then rebalancing every year. And so there's a lot of reasons why I understand the speculation here, and why I think it makes sense that there is a high probability that this space can take off and have another surge in the future. At the same time, it could just stay flat, it could go down, but these are like some of the reasons why I think that it could go up.
Yeah, that's great. And like you said, it's very unpredictable, but out of really any analysis I've heard yet, that was the most in-depth and understandable way to describe the market. So again, thank you for that. So we're going to move into the lightning round, which is just four quick questions that we have for you before we let you go. So if you're ready, we'll get right into that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. Yeah, a lot of people like this part of the interview. So the first question is simple. It's just, do you have any questions that you'd like to ask Christian or I before we move forward?
Yeah, of course. So tell me more about your backgrounds and what I know you're in the Binghamton management class, that it's a management and information systems class. So tell me more about your backgrounds, why you took that class, and just curious, what you're how the book has helped, and what trajectory you're trying to go on in the future.
Honestly, the class is required for any business major, but I found it extremely interesting because the professor kind of breaks down the tech field in a more understandable way, kind of similar to your book. And honestly, I don't know where I want to go with tech in the future, but I know that it's going to be a massive part of any business that anybody wants to go into. So definitely just getting my feet wet with that in this class and with your book is what's going to help me in my future career. Because even if I want to go into, say, accounting or finance, I know that any aspect of tech and coding and all that stuff is going to be a major aspect of it moving forward. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, for me, it's really the same thing. It's just we're business majors in college, so it's one of the classes we had to take. But I really enjoy it just because it focuses on real world information, what's actually happening and then what's going to happen, so that it's relevant information for us that, we know what to expect when we get out, or at least, predictions of what to expect. And my background is just I've always been, or consider myself an entrepreneur, always been interested in startups, tech, app companies like Apple and all these different things, these entrepreneurs like Peter Thiel of PayPal or Steve Jobs of Apple and Reid Hoffman. All these guys have been really big inspiration. So starting this podcast less than a year ago with Christian has been super helpful, because it's just allowed us to interview people like you and really just dig deeper into people's stories and get a better understanding of what people are doing in the real world to find success and create careers. So really enjoyed this interview so far. It's been one of my favorite ones.
Thank you. No, it's a pleasure talking to both of you.
Awesome. So we're going to get into the first question, or really the second question of the lightning round. Is it's just, if you could have dinner with any three people alive or dead, who would they be and why?
That's really interesting. I got to think about that one. So I think it would be really interesting to have, actually, if it was in the same room, I would kind of put people who have clashing opinions in there who have been alive in the same period. I think what would be really fun right now to do is imagine if you were in the same room as Obama, Trump, and let's pick one more person who has been pretty influential to the political climate. We can put Bush in there too. And I think having the last three current president and the last two presidents in the same room, it would be just interesting to see how the perspectives and opinions of those in power after they took office on the previous term were versus the opinions of the president who actually served that term, and the outlooks on the climate of, not just politics and international, relations and development there and trade there, but also with what would be really fun to know is what their vision of the country is. I feel like sometimes a lot of that is it's told in very simple ways, on certain policy things that they want to change. But if we had an ideal vision that what was Bush's ideal world? What if he could have a magic wand and change everything and make one big policy or change in the world? What would that be? Same thing for Obama, same thing for Trump. And just seeing how that differs and getting each other's perspectives on like how the past is making their current term difficult, and just like learning that, like I think that like dinner conversation would be, as long as it didn't get heated, I think like that would be a pretty fun and eye-opening conversation.
Yeah, I think that would be a very interesting dinner. You might raise some attention from the rest of the people in the restaurant, but I like what you said about the clashing mindsets and perspectives. Like, who would you say from the tech industry would be good to sit down with?
Yeah, tech industry, like there's, so, you know, if you look at like the big, like if you look at like Zuckerberg and Tim Cook and Sundar Pichai, like CEO of Google, Apple, Facebook, they are, even Satya, they're like all very, like the outlook that they have to have on the market tends to favor more liberal and left-wing views, because those sort of views, specifically like less for Microsoft and Apple, but more for like Google and Facebook, it just supports their business model. If they support equality and free rights and a lot of these issues, then they can, you know, get more legislation and more initiative and funding to give internet to everyone and support a lot of these developmental efforts. If they can do that and more people use the internet, then more people will jump on Google and Facebook, which makes their platform more valuable and generates money. And so it would be interesting to get people who are running companies like that in the same room as people who have more notoriously had opinions that are on the exact opposite end of the spectrum, like Peter Thiel and other people, like the founders of Palantir, like these companies that work very closely with defense and with financial institutions and traditionally publicly support candidates on the other side. Like, it would be interesting to see what they're valuing, whether these opinions are just based in business. Like, they, you know, 80% of the reason why they support a candidate is not because it's their personal beliefs, it's just because it's best interest for their shareholders and their company, or whether they actually believe it and they want to make that vision come true and they have, you know, strong ideological ties to that. And so it'd be just like, these are the sort of things that like you can only speculate on, but until you like meet these people, you can't really know. And so that's why I think it'd be really interesting to just learn more about that.
100%. I think just being around someone as influential as, like you said, Trump or a big tech guy would just change your mindset forever. Because for us, like interviews like this, even though they're just like an hour or so long, they really influence us in a big way and have changed our mindset over the last year. So I definitely like what you said about the clashing views. And we're just going to move into the next question here. So if you were in college, like a sophomore like we are right now, what side hustle would you start and how would you go about starting it?
That's a good question. I think those sort of things just come to you based on two things. It's either like one is like a problem that you see and you experience, and especially as a college student, you just want to like solve that because there's a lot of opportunities and, you know, pitch competitions and things of that nature that are targeted for entrepreneurship in schools. So it's either, you know, a pain point that you see, or the second thing is something you're really passionate about and that you love doing. Like, for me, like I love socks. It's really random, but I love like funny, like cute pattern socks with like different animals or different patterns or like fun things on them. And so for me, like if I was in college and I didn't have like a particular pain point or something that's like on my mind that like I really want to solve, like it'd be cool to do some sort of like starting your own product and seeing how you can use Alibaba to manufacture these sort of socks. And there's a lot of companies like Happy Socks that like sell one pair for like $15, $20. If you package it with like, you know, four pairs, five pairs, like Christmas special, maybe throw in the sixth pair, and it's like $100 box. It's like fancy packaging. The margins there are huge. And so if you're able to do that and then slowly expand to other accessories like ties, bow ties, pocket squares, and it's just like a fun accessory brand, I think like for me, like that would be really fun. So I guess it's like based on your hobbies. It's based on like what unique niche interests you're passionate about. Right now, I think there's a lot of things that are hot, like drop shipping is pretty hot right now. That's getting saturated. But in general, like I know a friend, I had a friend in school, like starting like a clothing company seems kind of far-fetched. He started his own sneaker brand, and he specifically started it. The word in Latin that he used means like rebuilding and growth. And He basically started that company to his county, and got affected by Hurricane Katrina. And so he sells his sneakers, and he donates money to different nonprofits that help people in natural disaster events. And he started at school, and now he's growing it, and he has a full-time job, and he still runs that company. And I was really impressed, because I was like, how did you get the molds for these shoes? How did you get a manufacturer? How did you know if the seams are good, and what materials to use? And he just he talked to a lot of people. He was really entrepreneurial. He went out there and researched online, looked at different suppliers on Alibaba, cold emailed a lot of people working in the supply chain of big shoe companies in the States, and he met with them or jumped on a phone call and just absorbed as much as he could, and then he launched it, and now it does well for him. It supports his goals of helping communities in need, and it also generates some money for him on the side. And so that's follow, even if it's something specific like that, follow your interest and just take it to the end. Make sure when you start out, you should just set a goal. I want to make sure that, throughout this whole process, at least I get to see that sneaker. I get to see a pair of socks that I can see right now in my head, but I want to be able to wear them, and I want to be able to show them and have my friends wear them. And then slowly, when you'll get there, and then afterwards you'll, want to scale. And it's a natural, fun process.
Definitely. One of my mentors, Dave Meltzer, says something very similar, where it's just be more interested than interesting. And it's really just a matter of, going out there and be proactive about something you're interested in. So you hit it right on the nail. And the last question here for the lightning round is, what's one thing that you know today that you wish you knew when you were 19?
Yeah, I think, let me think about that. Yeah, I think the biggest piece of advice I would give to my former self is, you think that some things are unattainable, or you think that people are not going to be as receptive as you think they are. But kind of what you said, the more you put yourself out there, the more you expose yourself to new people and new ideas, the more you just naturally grow. My mentor used to tell me, you're the average of the five people you surround yourself the most with. And so obviously, if you have friends that are entrepreneurial, you're going to feel that way too. And so I would do that. When you assess and figure out what you want to do, obviously keep those sort of people close, but also on LinkedIn, if you see someone that's interesting and you want to reach out to them, send them a personalized message and try to grab 5, 10, 15 minutes of their time and poke at them with specific questions. If you want to do an interview with someone like Flexport, who's just killing it in the freight shipping business, and you know nothing about it, and do your research, and then reach out to someone who works there on the product or operations side, and you guys are already doing that. You're doing podcasts. I think that sort of hustle and the ability to just shoot those shots is really, really important, because a lot of those will convert. And when they do, you're just going to grow as a person. You're going to just learn a lot about a lot of different things. And the way you create opportunity the way you act on opportunity and you create value is by taking a lot of these different things that you see and people do executing well and combining them and applying it to that niche that you're in. And so, the more you learn like this, the more you learn through people rather than reading textbooks or reading a lot of literature. I think that is what I place a lot of value on.
Yeah, that's a great answer to that question. And like you said, what we're doing with the podcast, that's something we talk about a lot to other college students, is trying to stress that. It's a way of networking, but to scale, not limiting yourself to where you are geographically. So that's a great answer to the question. We really appreciate your time today. You've, gave a lot of great answers to our questions, and I'm sure our audience will also appreciate that. So one last thing we ask is, where can our audience find you on social media or websites, whatever it may be, just so that they could follow you and along, the rest of your journey and buy your books and everything else?
Yeah. So you can find me on LinkedIn or Quora. If you just search my name, Aditya Agashe or Adi Agashe, you'll find it there. Follow me. I always like, I post every week on LinkedIn. I answer questions all the time on Quora. And for the books, you can find Swipe to Unlock and Bubble or Revolution. The first is the book on business strategy and technology. And the second, Bubble or Revolution, is on blockchain and cryptocurrency. So you can find both of those on Amazon, even local bookstores like Barnes and Nobles and other stores that you might be buying at also have access to it. But Amazon is probably the most convenient way for most of your listeners.
Awesome. That's
and I can shoot you the links after. So if there's like a text page, you can put in the comment section of the podcast or in like the description.
Exactly. Yep. We have a show notes section for the podcast where we include all the links that you just mentioned us. So we'll be sure to have all that for you.
Awesome.
All right, man. I really appreciate it. And when the episode's out and whatnot, we'll shoot you a link and we'll make some posts on LinkedIn ourselves and whatnot. So really looking forward to share it with our audience. So if there's anything else you need, just let us know. Hey guys, show some love for the Real Talk University podcast by subscribing and leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. See you all next week.